Hey guys, thanks for listening to another episode of Edward's Review. Wow. Today of all days, the 19th of October. Okay, let's do a different spin on today's episode, shall we? You know, as far as I know, I've heard this happen like a couple weeks ago. At a famous location inside of a famous convention. Let's put it this way. Who are you gonna call? Yeah, that's right. That old saying, that old 80s vibe. Yeah, it's been kicking right around. So, this time around, by a month's time from now, we will be having the absolute blast of the release of Ghostbusters Afterlife. Yes, Ghostbusters. So let's go ahead and take a spin back. Turn back the clock, if you will. Back in 1984. Yes, 1984. That'll be the first time we ever know that the writers for this one is not only of Harold Ramis, the late Harold Ramis, and Dan Aykroyd, but produced and directed by Ivan Reitman. Stars, of course, Dan Aykroyd, Harold Ramis, Bill Murray, and as well as Ernie Hudson. So let's go ahead and take a spin. So you have a bunch of psychopara-psychologists, right? Try and study the paranormal as well as the psychosis of people reading minds, more like an ESP. Upon a investigation of a library, we finally discovered that there is actually life after literally the afterlife. So, that being said, a place that is that which Bandom, which is Columbia College, by the way, or Columbia University in New York, in the storyline, kind of like took away their funding. So they had no choice but to move elsewhere on their search. So they move their work with many things, many ideas. Of course, we all know that we have seen the infamous fire station with their secretary, Janine Melnitz, which played by Andy Potts, of all people. Yes, and they have suffered several calls, except for one call that actually keeps getting them, like, you know, a banana and all that, and that was a case for Dana Barrett, which her building, it seems to be spectered happening going on in there, and she would like the Ghostbusters to investigate. Of course, they didn't find anything, but they'll find something in historical reference of having the building being of a cult. Of course, we have Brooke Moranis playing the next-door neighbor to Dana, which is Louis Tell, an accountant of all things. And they will handle the huge big bad as soon as the guy from the EPA, which is Walter Peck, who played by William Atherton Knight. His best films be known for being of, I believe, the Die Hard, at least the two movies of that one. Anyways, they go ahead and battle Gozer the Garzarian, which, in layman's terms, she pretty much brings the end of all ends. And sure enough, when she disappears upon them blasting her, they go ahead and transform, or at least Gozer transforms the one thing that one of the Ghostbusters thought of and thought it was not going to happen, but it did. The Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. And of course, this is kind of funny because you're literally having literally a big marshmallow coming downtown and just wreck things. Anywho, as they already defeated Gozer by crossing streams, they survived their ordeal at the end of the movie. That kind of brings us to another part of the franchise, if you will. This is about the 1986 syndication of the real Ghostbusters. Now, there was an issue during that time because there was also another Ghostbusters another Ghostbusters rights, and that will be dealing with Filmation, which kind of like deliberately gone ahead and kind of, you know, give us a like a different style, if you will. And this is like, you know, the live action Ghostbusters where there's two detectives with a big monkey, which they continue that in the 86 version as well as the cartoon. So the titles had to be changed. So they change our Ghostbusters to the real Ghostbusters and just left, you know, the other title for Filmation Ghostbusters. Which, it was simple. It was basically based off of the real Ghostbusters back in 1975. And it kind of have that whole weird, you know, trenches. But back to this story, the real Ghostbusters ran a tremendously long, long time for at least 7 seasons. Giving us 140 episodes throughout the time, which gives us to the continuation of the movie, which is Ghostbusters 2 in 98. This is a direct sequel to the 84 version, and it kind of basically tells us like 5 years later, this is what exactly happened to them in the film version. That they caused damage to the building. They literally gone crazy. Which is definitely totally different from the animation, which gives us how our characters split into different things to build revenue, if you will. Bill Murray being a TV host, if you will. Dan Aykroyd, Ray, runs an occult, a book occult store where it deals with grimoires and books. That's another term for a book. Egon continued his psychosis of emotional challenge with couples, children, pets, as experimentation, which that deals with emotions, leaving Melnitz and of course Zedmore partially helping run the firehouse for certain occasions, which is birthday parties, whatnot. They literally decommissioned their proton packs until a new threat happened, which is a spectral entity go by the name of... it's been a long time. You may want to forgive me on this one. Goes by the name of Viggo. And due to Viggo, Viggo the Carpathian, he literally trying to jump into Dana's baby boy Oscar, which kind of tells us that these two actually ran two different lives. Both Dana and Peter never really got together until the end of the film, which we will probably hear or at least get a idea what happened after this movie. And, you know, of course, this also coincided with running with the animated series, giving us the final season being of Slimer and the Real Ghostbusters, which was a different name title before it was for the last season. Of course, during the late 80s, we never hear anything other than, you know, having the continuation of the animated series, which goes until the early 90s, like 1991. So it pretty much slowly faded into existence, if you will, kind of disappeared for a while, until the animated version of the Extreme Ghostbusters, or at least Extreme Ghostbusters, to be exact, which is a continuation of the cartoon version of the Real Ghostbusters back in 91, which gives us a good 6-year gap between then. So it did take several years. All the Ghostbusters literally just went their separate ways. We find ourselves with a new set of Ghostbusters, having Egon being their mentor. We have Kylie Griffin, which is a supposed goth of the group. She wears a vest of sorts, with carrying a handgun proton pack instead of a rifle. She's also the genius and an expert in the occultism. So she pretty much has this, you know, this idea, this vibe, knowing that there's something out there is, like, really different. We also have Eduardo Rivera, which is a cynical slacker. This one was literally, like, your Peter Venkman, just thinking like, oh yeah, this is how we're gonna do it. Garrett Miller, which is a young paraplegic athlete who used the wheelchair, which was the only different Ghostbuster in the group that needed to be to access things. This was during a time where we don't see a lot of characters who are disabled or different or anything. And Roland Jackson is the astutest mechanic and genius that rivals at least close to Ray's understanding of many things, as well as being the tech of the group. But there's no development of too much of the Ghostbuster stuff unless he's working it with Egon. Of course, Jeanine Melnitz is still their secretary. And as adorable as the season goes, we always get our favorite one-of-kind Slimer. Even though this is the only time that we ever get a different style of Ghostbusters with the new thing and everything else, we do have ourselves a literal, in a way, we do have ourselves a crossover, if you will, that we have both the original Ghostbusters as well as the newcomers. And of course, and this was my absolute favorite when I was growing up, we do have a different talent on this one for the other Ghostbusters, of course. For the animated group, the cast for that one is, of course, Maurice Lemaitre, Frank Welker, done, and I'm gonna be serious with you, done voice talents back in the day for, and this is actually for Maurice. Maurice was Egon for both the original and the follow-up of Extreme Ghostbusters. He's also a Brain of Pinky and the Brain, as well as the mannerism, if you will, and the tone of one Orson Welles. Frank Walker, his voice talent is best known for not only being of Ray being on the Ghostbusters, but he also voice Fred Jones for his younger version, as well as the 70s. And believe it or not, Frank himself literally have done both Ray as the stand-in as well as Slimer, but for Extreme Ghostbusters, due to some scheduling issue, the gentleman named Billy West, which is best known for being Fry in Futurama, took over for Slimer for the Extreme Ghostbusters. For Frank, on the other hand, yeah, he has done many things for certain characters. He did provide the voice for nearly all the cartoon version of Scooby-Doo, to say the least. And believe it or not, he is literally the voice for Grimlock, if I remember this well, or if not, Soundwave or Megatron for the leading series of Transformers. It's very good to know that some of these talents are still, around. Of course, there is always a drawback for certain characters. Of course, Arsenio Hall did voice Zedmor up until the third season, and then got replaced in season four to the finale. A gentleman named Edward L. James or Jones. Edward L. Jones, or Buster Jones, if you will, as well as Laura Summer for seasons one and two, and Katie Sukic, being season three through seven. Katie, or Catherine, is best also known for being a voice actress for Linka and the Planet, Captain Planet and the Planeteers, Lola Bunny, of certain things. And Fifi the Fume and Little Sneezer from Tiny Toon Adventures. The character Louis Tully didn't really get developed until season 5 and 6, who voiced by none other than Roger Bumpass. He's also a voice talent for several characters of well, several characters, but one popular one would be Squidward Tentacles from the ever-popular SpongeBob. Dave Coulier voice Peter Venkman at season 3 through 7, but for the first two seasons, it was a gentleman named Lorenzo Music. Or draw David Lorenzo Music, which is best known for his musician, or at least his music, for the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour, which is a long, long time ago. That explains the other half of the other side for Extreme Ghostbusters, which, of course, Tara Strong. Some of us know her for her best work for being of, wow, it's a big list. So here's the ones I know of. She plays Batgirl and Harley Quinn for the Batman series. She did replace Arlen Silkie, who did voice Harley Quinn for certain ones, back in like the early 90s or so. She voiced Ruka in Final Fantasy X2 as well as Kingdom Hearts 2. She's also best known to be a character for Raven for Teen Titans and Teen Titans Go. She also lent her voice for My Little Pony as everyone's little favorite princess. Whoa. You will remember you get to remember your name and you're already forgetting a little. Twilight Sparkle, Princess Twilight Sparkle, till the very end, which her work is phenomenal. Also, and believe it or not, she does do Jimmy Turner on occasion, as well as the grown up for Dill Pickles. She was also the original Bubbles, as well as the original Ben Tennyson in the Ben 10 series, when I believe first started, of course. Besides Tara Strong, we also have the not hard to miss with the Garrett voice, Jason Marsden. And I cannot stress this gentleman's career enough. This guy is like everywhere and every which way. However, Roland Jackson, which is the mechanic in the group, he is voiced by Alfonso Rubio. And if you don't know that name, I believe that you are still young, but Google the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air 90s, because he was Carlton in the series. And no matter what, you always will find a reason to watch whatever he's doing, you know? Of course, as characters go, this is the third time that Janine Melnitz has been voiced by another person, and this person will be Patricia Ann Music. So we don't really hear back from anything of the Ghostbusters until 2016. And that's where controversy comes in. The spectacle of the controversy is because of two main reasons. And I know that some fans and, filmmakers may agree or disagree. Me, I'm a stickler for story. I do see some flaws, I do see some issues, but I cannot argue with the fact that there was a lot of cameos for certain individuals. And B, you can't really not say anything about the story without actually having the story, or at least a portion of the story that comes in later. So here's my dissecting of this film, if you will. So we have two different titles. Of course, we have the original, Ghostbusters 2016, and then you have Ghostbusters Answer the Call, which, is a huge, huge indicator that this is a totally different Ghostbusters. And you can't just like automatically assume that it's going to be totally weird about it. So, of course, this deals with an all-female cast of characters. Of course, we have Melissa McCarthy, Kristen Wiig, Kate McCarron, and Leslie Jones, and this headline as significantly as the characters go. Of course, we have Katie being the mad scientist, Kristen Wiig being the skeptic, Melissa McCarthy being the Ray Stantz of the group, and Leslie Jones being of the woman who's like wants to believe but don't want to believe. And of course, as their secretary, and believe it or not, this is how I'm just like jaw dropping with this guy's filmology on this one. Chris Hemsworth, of all things, plays the secretary, yet bumbling psychic, if I have to say it like that. And he pulls up very well in this film, but right at it. I like, there's a few things that's been like, okay, this is like a scene stealing kind of deal. So of course, this film is actually directed by, end quote, Paul Feig. He is best known to be working with a lot of times with Melissa McCarthy and Kristen Wiig on occasion. Of course, for Melissa, on the other hand, she's worked with him for Bridesmaid, The Heat with Sandra Bullock, as well as Spy. So, yeah, Pig knows where he's getting at. But he co-written the script with another person who's also alumni, so to speak, on NBC. She is Katie Duport. And this is, they loosely based this off of the Ivan Reitman, Dan Aykroyd, Harold Ramis idea. Sadly, at this time, the late Harold Ramis had passed away, but there would be a significant cameo for certain characters. Of course, this takes another spin on this one. We do have like the same similarities of how it is, but totally different. We have both Abby and Aaron being psychologists, but estranged friends in New York, who co-written Ghosts from Our Past, which turns out that Abby was the one who's constantly doing the researching and continuing on without Aaron knowing that the book was still in circulation, and she's working as a professor in Columbia University. Which, again, universities, they decided to, like, not grant her I believe her tenure, if I remember that script very well, which is kind of like a, it's cool, you can work for us, but you won't have to worry about getting fired unless you walk out and yada, yada, yada. Do forgive me for those who are teachers. I don't know how a tenure works somehow. So do forgive me on that one. So Aaron and Abby are coincide to find out that the book is still in circulation. She's trying to tell Abby to get rid of it, to take it off her name or take it away from her position. Therefore, she won't be that. But they go and investigate a literal haunted house, and Aaron is now not so skeptic, but realizing that there is actual life after death. There's literally a manifestation of ghosts living among us, so to speak. And this captured on YouTube, like, videos, so it's like, yeah, this makes her look a little more crazy. So, of course, they are literally, like, you know, got rid of, until they did it again in a subway, testing out a new proton pack, which I admit, that's a, you know, kind of bulky, kind of big. But, you know, then again, Iron Man did make his armor out of scrap, so. But they also met a lady named Patty, who works as the, you know, train operator, the attendee for the train stop. Which promptly, having someone trying to do something. This is the one cameo that I know that we have a Ghostbusters film. If you have someone who's just like automatically like tag or graph a wall with the signature of a ghost and a circle with a line in black. Which in skeptically you say, but even so, that is like an homage to, hey, that's the symbol. That's how they put it together. But even so, this story of how that symbol became to be was more, I don't know, perfected, if you want to say it like that, or, you know, totally like arranged to be so. So, of course, you know, totally different. So, you know, they slowly find out that there's this guy named Ronan North who has a like god complex with the occult. Took their idea of their book and twisted it, if you will, into something that is totally different. And not only that, after their successful test inside of a concert, if you will, which is a metal concert, by the way, they soon to be discovered that the mayor, played by, I think, Andy Garcia, caught wind, and he's like, okay, you can do this because now you have proof. And sadly, the proof had to be right after the skeptic, who played by Bill Murray of all people, accidentally gets tossed out the window, which caught wind, and now they're being like investigated to be making sure that they're frauds, if you will. So again, they investigate further what's going on, and they're discovering that there's this person that having a lot of calls that is like in and around the area that they're like working with, end up being like some sort of literal friction point on a ley line, which is like a spiritual fault line, if you will, for something that and this is only my best interpretation of this one, that people can sense it psychologically, that it's nearby. It's like a hair raising from your arm, or a tingling in your back, or a sneeze that you like automatically sneeze at. Even though it's invisible, you know it's there. Something's happening. And this intersects with all traffic of all things that they're trying to do, which provides us the confrontation of Ronan and the Ghostbusters. Until he decided to become a spectre of his own by electrocuting himself on his own machine. Which kind of is funny, but still. This is where things start to get a little crazy. Abby gets possessed, and then all heck is breaking loose. So, of course, this literally like became like a fault line explosion. Not like the original, though. That was a totally different kind of explosion. But this is like a boiler room explosion where their ghosts is not really trapped, so to speak, but they don't have a containment unit during that time. Which, that's where the skeptic filmmakers, like myself, thinking, like, that is possible, but it's not possible. It's kind of like that one, one of those talks. So, of course, they, again, confrontate with Ronan, again, but being of a oversized-looking cartoonish, but very mean looking version of the Ghostbusters logo. And of course they do get out. I'm not going to describe the one scene, But let's put it this way. They literally had to hit him to get into the vortex. So, of course, they escape. The whole city is starting to realize that Ghostbusters are literally something. And the mayor's trying to, you know, denounce them publicly. But, ironically, they're also fueling the whole thing. Now, of course, this at the end of the film gives us our iconic scene of our firehouse. And of course, and I forgot to count the second cameo, which is Dan Aykroyd being in the cab, but the third cameo being of Ernie Hudson being the funeral director, as well as the uncle to Leslie Jones' character, wondering what happened to the hearse, because there better not have been a body in that hearse when they did that. And of course, you know, we get our infamous scene of credits until we get our fourth and final representation of what would be Harold Ramis's going for Egon, if you will. But it was replaced with none other than Sigourney Weaver being the mentor teacher to Kate's character. So, of course, you know, the whole thing's been built up, but if, just like a Marvel movie, if you wait until the very end, you start seeing another scene, and then you hear from Patty's line is, "Who is Zool?" That in itself should have been able to, like, leave us a breadcrumb, if you will. But, of course, after, again, we don't hear anything. We just having a lot of talks that the prominent sequel to Ghostbusters Afterlife, which is totally, like, different and totally changing the playing field for certain things. One of which is, it was the fallout of Enter the Call, the 2016 film, for people to, like, hey, give us an original story. What's up with that and all that jazz? Which, personally, to me, it's not that bad of a film, but a lot of people are, like, pointing out that there is a lot of flaws in 2016. Although, I would honestly say the major flaws I've been seeing is a few people being a little, you know, manhandling or mansplaining. I mean, for heaven's sakes, you know, there's a lot of people outside the film thing that actually keep, you know, portraying Ghostbusters, portraying their version of Ghostbusters. And I'm happy that there's literally a diversity and a calling of all kind of Ghostbusters out there in the world, which we'll probably be hearing that in Afterlife. So I cannot just keep saying that it may not happen, but it has happened. It is going to happen. You know, someone's going to be writing a story, or at least more of a fan fiction, if you will, more like a fan film, if you would, like, call it, that we will be seeing, like, different Ghostbusters dealing with different things. So, that being said, we also find ourselves with a lot of, and I'm going to quote this too, if you wouldn't mind. I mean, we have seen a lot of different things. Of course, we have ourselves visiting the Ghostbusters genre with both. Well, here's the weird thing, all right? There is a video game called Ghostbusters the Video Game back in 2009. And this predates before 2016, but even so, this was the script for Ghostbusters 3. Then it got remastered in a new way, or at least a new style, back then. And this deals with a lot of things that the Shandor prophecy and all that jazz and all that hocus pocus in the third script should have been a live action. I for one did not have a problem whatsoever that I wanted to see, but then again, I was not the creator. I didn't write this. So, however, of course, this also has another predate, if you will, and this is a comic series, if you will, the real Ghostbusters, which is loosely based off the animated series, but now it's been publication of, I believe, Now Comics, or was in Now Comics. Then it just got switched to Marvel. And then our Infinite's series gets shipped off to, I believe, another company, IDW. And we get a few occasional stories that's based off loosely on certain things. Of course, we had ourselves a traversal, if you will, a traversal variant comic of all Ghostbusters of different styles. We had Ghostbusters with their first gear, their 90s version, the Extreme Ghostbusters, the girls. Basically, it was like a merry-go-round of who's who's what and haha. So, of course, that being said, in a month's time, I'm willing to watch Afterlife, because a couple weeks ago, I did hear from New York Comic Con that they did their showing there, and they had nothing but top remarks about it. I mean, if you're not a fan, it's understandable. But you gotta understand that Ghostbusters has a long genre of things. Even there's a documentary of how being a fan of Ghostbusters turned into a fandom, turned into a somewhat of a cosplay lifestyle, if you will. And it does bring people joy. It brings people, like, together. Safely. Safely, by the way. But even so, there's a lot of people who love the genre and likes to continue doing this. And, of course, there is also, you know, an occult following, if you will, that, you know, span over a few decades of different characters, you know? So, of course, you know, there's no, you know, Freaklinks or no Ghost Avengers without some sort of, like, a drawback to Ghostbusters. Because it was literally based on an occult that Dan Aykroyd himself had experienced and is part of his family, if you will. And he added that into Harold Ramis's comedy. Or a thought of comedy, a thought of genius between those two. And, you know, spun this wonderful series. So anyways, I'm going to bring this episode to a close, which I thank you guys for listening. Do forgive me for certain gaps of the clips, because there was a lot of things I had to do. And there was a commotion that's happening right before I end the one. So I do thank you for listening, and as always, wait until the next episode. See you guys.
Hey guys, I want to thank you for listening to my podcast. I'm also known to be over at not only Spotify, but as well as... Oh, wow. I'm also on Spotify, Breaker, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, and Radio Public. So yeah, if you guys want to keep on listening, besides me covering certain stories, just shoot me a message on my review page over at anchor.fm/Edward-Castro5. That is C-A-S-T-R-O, and as a joke, no relation.